I'm Mo Tafik. I have no institutional affiliation right now, but I'm a freelance writer, and I'm speaking to Liz Winstead, whose institutional affiliation is of Liz Winstead.
My apartment.
Yes. And I'm at my apartment right now, and Liz is at the Blogging Head studio.
I'm at my apartment right now, too.
Oh, you are? Oh.
Yeah, I'm at my apartment.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
House call. So we're both at our apartments, and we both have no institutional affiliations right now, but we used to have institutional affiliations, and we are here to discuss two of the institutions with which we used to be affiliated,
Indeed.
Jezebel in my case and The Daily Show in Liz's case. And I'm going to let you talk now, Liz, because I don't know why I've been hogging.
You've been very good. You've laid out. So obviously, Mo and I got together being that there was a Jezebel affiliation and a Daily Show affiliation, and the dust-up of the Jezebel article vis-a-vis whether or not there's a Daily Show woman problem, and then also the Daily Show's choice of Olivia Munn and the reaction of people in the article, as well as the sort of broader response to the kerfuffle at the Daily Show.
Whether it's indeed a sexist organization, you know, whether John is a misogynist, you know, whatever. No. Also, whether she's funny, which I think has been lost.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, first of all, funny is subjective. And so to say whether or not Olivia Mum or me or you or anyone's funny is if we've made people laugh, then we are funny. And people might not think we're funny, but that's just a matter of that's up for interpretation. And I get very frustrated when it's like, she's not funny. Well, the article that came out in Jezebel was even critical of her before she had really even gotten any chops in. And last Thursday, she did a piece on immigration in Arizona, and I thought she was hilarious. I thought she held her own. I thought she was really funny. And so now where does the conversation go?
Right. Well, I think that it's good to bring the conversation to last Thursday and to that actual critical point, which is I actually have to say that I thought that the piece that she did on the Russians was really funny. With the immigration thing, I thought that she was being very thrust into this kind of Daily Show correspondent persona, and it definitely seemed to me like she, I wanted to give her a few Klonopin, and just because she seemed very on edge, and I understand, because I would be on edge if I were performing under this kind of, you know, microscope. Does that make sense? But we should probably explain from the beginning this the history of this meme, which is Olivia Munn was the first, I suppose, female correspondent hired by The Daily Show in 7 years, and she wasn't a comedian. She isn't a comedian, a trained comedian, and she was hired on the basis of her work for, I guess, a video, the G4 network, and she happens to be very attractive, and she has posed for Playboy, but not in a naked way at all. So this is her, and she was number 8 on Maxim's top 100 hottest chicks list. So I don't really think that is that relevant, but, you know, there was...
None of that is relevant. It's how she did in her audition for The Daily Show. That is what is relevant. And, you know, when you hire people for The Daily Show, sometimes people come from news and they're not comedians. When I was there, Brian Unger was a guy who was a disgruntled news person who we hired to come from news to be a fake news correspondent on The Daily Show.
I think disgruntled means a lot more than, you know, your background. As long as you're disgruntled, you're probably, you know,
when you've had your buttons pushed by the news industry and it's been, you studied journalism in college and you're like, oh my God, I got to get out, and they're doing a show that's actually going to make fun of journalism. and the TV media, and there's an opportunity for you to do that, you're going to be really good at it.
Yeah, but
Olivia.
But so she gets hired, and I don't really know what the genesis of this was, but then Jezebel wrote a post on how she was, you know, the first woman that they'd hired in a high profile position in a very long time, and some people who've worked there contend that The Daily Show is sort of a boys' club. And to me, an outside observer, not knowing anything about, you know, what these women contend or anything about The Daily Show, I thought, well, of course it's a boys' club. What's not a boys' club, you know?
You can say it's a boys' club, but it's really a club of people who are, the reason that show works is not because a whole bunch of it's a boys club or a girls club or any club. It's because a bunch of people with a love and a drive of history and of the news, who also have this amazing gift of taking that historical context and media observation and turning it into brilliant political satire are doing a show.
Right.
That is the club. The club is news nerds who are also fantastic comedy writers making a brilliant show every night. That is the club.
And when we discussed this last week, you brought up the fact that you didn't get a lot of female applicants to work as writers
right.
on The Daily Show.
When I launched, I got 150 submissions, and only 3 were from women. And so we put out a call that we were doing a daily topical, political satirical show. We put the call out to all the agents, and then the submissions that we got back, there's only 3 women. Now, at The Daily Show, subsequent to that, writers don't quit there very much, but now subsequent to that, when they hire writers and look at writer submissions, they look at the submissions blind. They take all names off of
submission
so that they're only reading the content.
They aren't saying,
so
that sounds like a chick name. I don't want to read that.
Right, yeah. Well, and they're only looking at the content because on that particular show, that show's different than like when you try to lump The Daily Show in with regular general entertainment late night shows,
mm-hmm.
it does a disservice because it is such a niche as opposed to there's many more general entertainment female comedy writers and actresses out there than there are this crazy hybrid thing that you need to be a writer on the show, to be a correspondent on the show. You need to be somebody who understands that the show in and of itself is a character and that you need
right.
to turn your tone to be able to execute what the show needs you to be.
Right. And I can't
answer to why they have, it's been a long time since they've hired a female correspondent. I really don't want to speak to that because I don't know why. And it could be that a lot of people came through and didn't hit the tone nail, where there's a lot of hilarious people who may even love The Daily Show, understand all the jokes, get it completely like we all do, but when it comes to actually trying to nail
right.
And execute what they need, they might not be able to bring that to the audition
or just gel with the staff. I mean, it seems to me like it would be a very specific and, you know, again, like I don't really have a very strong opinion about this one way or the other, but I used to work at Talking Points Memo, for instance. That's a kind of geeky, political, wonky. I mean, it's like Daily Show. The staff is like what Daily Show without having to have a sense of humor necessarily about
right.
What you're writing about. Although a lot of people do to their credit, but you know, it was all dudes, you know, and it's because they have these autistic brains for, very obscure political facts, and that kind of stuff can come in handy, or it's necessary for producing a show like The Daily Show to kind of have that photographic memory for, arcana that sometimes I personally can't bother caring about. But I also think that, so I think that there's probably a little bit of that, which is just sort of the way that the brain stores information, that tends to be, you know, like there seems to be a disconnect and the way that I, you know, kind of process and absorb information, I've found in my career to be slightly different from your average, political wonk. And I don't know, you know, there's just a lot. There's a lot to talk about there, but it doesn't really have to do with that Christopher Hitchens question, whether women are funny. I think that, you know, I think that this tapped into that, you know, vein of controversy. And unfortunately, what got lost was that I think that Olivia Munn is pretty funny, actually, as it turns out.
Yeah, she is really funny. And you know, her previous work, for people to hold it up and judge it and say, because she did this, she's not qualified to be on The Daily Show, makes me sick. You know, she did the work that she was doing. I mean, she's also a woman who is beautiful and understands the tone of The Daily Show and can do that, just like somebody has to be smart. I mean,
also, fact that she had, she came forward, she had trichotillomania or whatever that is, the disorder that causes you to pull out your hair, your eyelashes, and your...
Right.
Yeah, right. And that, to me, makes me think that she has just the right sort of obsessive personality for a show like The Daily Show, you know? Like, that...
Yes, because you are... That's exactly right. You have...
You know? She's gonna... I think that she... That looks very promising to me. Also, she suggested that she's had, you know, molestation in her past, some childhood trauma, all of that bodes well for being funny, I think.
I think when you look at, being comedic usually does stem from a host of crap that you have from your past, that I can vouch for. I have much, as does most.
That's why you're so easy to hate.
It's why I'm so easy to hate. Yeah. It's so true. But I think, it's interesting to me how people were so quick to attack her. And the bottom line is, like any TV show, people get to keep you on as long as they think that you're working with the tone of the show. And if they don't feel like you are anymore, then they ask you to go. And it doesn't feel good and it feels awful. And I'm certainly not here to speak for The Daily Show or any of the people interviewed in the article. I'm just here to speak from the experience of what that place is when I was there and the struggle to get a show on every night with the small pool of, forget about gender, people who make up that one part obsessive, crazy news person and then brilliant, genius, satirical writer. There's not many people in it. And that is where we differ from, other writing shows in TV. I mean, that just is. And that has to be recognized. It's interesting, though, when you look at, like, other fields, like, let's say NASCAR, for example. Like, there's not a whole lot of women in NASCAR. And why is that?
And why is the only one who's in it really hot?
Right. Is it because NASCAR is keeping the woman down? Or is it because...
They're only promoting the hot Danica Patrick chick. And it's
only
because...
That's right. And I think that, Mo, we're breaking the glass ceiling. There's a glass ceiling in NASCAR. And I think that we need to do something about that. I want to change the conversation to how sexist NASCAR is. Okay, I really don't.
We could talk about, I don't really know anything about NASCAR, unfortunately. Maybe having to do with the fact that I'm
But that's the
hate.
Bottom line. But see, that's the bottom line, is that if you wanted to write a story about NASCAR, you could find some women drivers who maybe didn't make the cut.
And I have no
like
doubt that it's a boys club.
But, no, I don't either.
But no, I mean.
And there's,
I guess like another thing that we talked about is that, you know, I was reading a another story today about, you know, sexual assault in the military. And, you know, the military, again, you know, I'm a girl. I don't really know a lot about war and weapons and stuff like that. But one thing I know a lot about is finance. And that's totally a boys' club. And it's caused a lot more destruction for society, I think, than, NASCAR.
Yes.
Although.
I agree.
I could be wrong. I don't know a lot about NASCAR.
Well, and I just feel like in the subsequent, sort of articles that have come out about after the Jezebel article, I mean, when you write an article that says it's called The Daily Show's Women's Problem, you're going to raise ire, with the women who actually work at The Daily Show. And the other thing that I think a lot of people don't really understand is in that photograph that when The Daily Show women did a rebut, the writing around a show like that comes from the associate producers, the researchers, the co-executive producers, the field producers, the segment producers. You know, all of those people are either writing for a field piece for a correspondent, which is writing. They don't happen to be called writers, but they are writing. They are, and they love that. And it's like an integral part of the show. And they're writing. There's so many people who provide a creative process to this machine, because it is a machine, that it sucks that in the subsequent articles I was reading, people were saying like, oh, I looked into it and I saw that someone was called co-executive producer and it's not really a creative role. And that particular woman who she was referring to is the woman who taught me how to produce in the field. And that is a woman who started out at The Daily Show writing and producing all of those correspondent pieces. And she worked her way up to now being like one of the people in charge of the show. So it's just an insult when people talk about something they don't know and they put it out there because they don't see what they want to see and they don't understand why they aren't seeing what they want to see. The conversation doesn't become productive. And you need to talk about the machinations of the show, what the show is. And the bottom line is, why doesn't anybody ask those questions? Why do you have to approach an article? It just felt like that article had an agenda. And the agenda was The Daily Show has a woman problem. And we talked to some women who
sure
didn't seem happy about their time there and have rebutted back by saying no one from The Daily Show would talk to us. Well, I don't know the process with which Erin used to try to get the women to talk to them. But if the approach was, I'm writing an article, I'm on The Daily Show, Women's Problem, does she expect she's going to get anyone to talk to her? I don't think so.
Now, I didn't, again, like, I don't really know much about the origin of it, and I have, I have a lot of love for Chucky's there, but my sense of it was, reading it, that, you know, like I said, I go back to it being like, well, you know, things, like, everything is a boys' club, so I bet that this has some grain of truth to it. The thing that bothered me about it, I suppose, was later on when Olivia Munn was interviewed in the New York Times, and then they, you know, they called up Erin for a quote, I suppose, and she said something about how Olivia Munn's whole deal is that she, will dress up in a French maid outfit and, that, you know, she will pose sexy and that she, you know, can kind of like, she can be one of the guys and she can be your kind of, you know, porn fantasy, pinup chick. But then, you know, she can also be a girl. Something like that. I don't even know.
And she can also be a great Daily Show correspondent. And that's the bottom line with when Erin, you know, that's her response, is she clearly has an issue.
I'm trying to find it, yeah.
And she didn't even uncover this, you know. If she has an issue with,
oh no,
if Olivia wants to be a French maid or whatever it is, so what? So what? If that's what she wants to do. The bottom line is she good enough to be on The Daily Show?
Okay, no, this is the quote
that actually
struck a nerve with me, I have to say. I don't want to say to anyone, don't you dare pose in a bikini, said Erin Carmen, a Jezebel writer, but there's all kinds of women who have not pursued that path and aren't getting nearly the attention she has and who are known for their comedy. And to me, that's like, I'm sorry, that's just not a point, you know? Like, no, what you're saying is kind of don't pose in a bikini. No.
You know what?
And, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what? Here's what's unbelievable. One of my favorite comics in the world is my dear friend Sarah Silverman. She's one of the funniest women I know. She's amazing. She would be awful on The Daily Show because it's not her style. So there's tons of women.
But she wouldn't be awful on The Daily Show
because it's not their style.
She would not be off.
No, she'd be awesome. She's awesome in a bikini. Yes. I've seen her in a bikini.
Yes.
She's hot.
I...
And you know who else is hot in a bikini? Samantha Bee is hot in a bikini. And you know, it's like
they are all so easy to hate.
And so just to act like Olivia Munn is the only woman who's hot on The Daily Show, A, insults me because I think all the women on The Daily Show are hot and smart and funny. And to act like there is some sort of trajectory that you have to be on to then land yourself on any TV show, and if you follow a different path, then you've been spurned. You know what? Guess what? Women who auditioned for The Daily Show and didn't get on, Olivia Munn didn't do anything to you. She's the one that got the job. Like, I'm sorry. Take a look at yourself and say, wow, how did I do in that audition? Did I do very well? Wow, you know what? Did 5 people do well and Olivia Munn got the job? You know, please, whoever said to anyone, hey, you know what you should do is go into show business because it's really fair and always equitable in its rewards.
And
you know, please.
I mean, well, this is the thing, too. Okay, so, like, Erin said that, and then Olivia Munn comes back with an interview saying, I'm easy to hate, I get it, you know, I'm 110 pounds now, I get it, I'm easy to hate. And I thought that, you know, Jesus, she's easy to hate because she's 110 pounds? Like, no, maybe she's, like, easy to, I mean, look, I don't really hate people, I don't really, like, bother hating people for, you know, being cool, but... Like, she's kind
you
of
also
cool
weigh
she's winning
pounds.
At, you know, she's easy to hate because she's winning. She's easy to hate because she's, like, successful and funny and pretty
That's exactly right.
One part of it. But when it gets dragged, when the discourse gets dragged into this sewer of, you're just jealous. Oh, my God. You're just jealous, you know, or you're a bad feminist because you're in a bikini, you know, or, stop it, you're just hating me because I'm beautiful, you know? It's like this weird, like, false dichotomy thing that, I think really sort of takes away from, you know, larger issues.
Right. But, Mo, what I would say to that is, in this particular instance, it wasn't like Olivia Munn had been on the show for 6 months, and she never was funny, but she was pretty, so they kept her. This article was written before Olivia Munn could even show people her chops. So what are they basing it on? They're basing it on what she did before, you know, the bikini aspect of who she is, without even judging her merits. So actually, the critics and in particular taking her on. What other?
That's also a really good point, I think, because the thing is that, you know, I mean, what is one? The idea that she wasn't a trained comedian, you know, whatever is.
What does that mean, trained comedian? You know what?
Sort of,
you don't have to be a trained comedian. The writers on The Daily Show.
Who the fuck is training anyone to do anything these days?
Who,
you know,
that's exactly right. There is no training to be a comedian.
Did you see?
And because comedy's subjective. Comedy Central gets to pick who they think is going to be the best person for their show.
And
the bottom line is, again, it's subjective, but in the choices of correspondents that The Daily Show has picked, I dare people, even though sometimes you think someone has an off night, to say that they have not been on it. Everyone that they bring on that's new has generally been hilarious.
No, they're pretty funny.
They know what they want.
And
to
this,
me, anyway, you know, you might think someone's not funny, but
of another thing that I also would like to give Jon Stewart some credit for, not to kind of like, you know, like give someone a blowjob who doesn't really need to be blown, but this did you see his thing a few months ago on Gretchen Carlson of Fox and Friends?
Oh, yeah.
That was hilarious. And that, to me, was sort of one of the, you know, most feminist things you could do is say, hey, lady, you know, I'm on to you. You're a lot smarter than you're sounding on TV, and you're playing this dumb, you know, you're actually perpetuating a destructive stereotype, and yet you're, you know, summa cum laude, Stanford concert violinist, and just letting you know I gotcha. And I liked that because, you know, that is what... What Gretchen Carlson is doing is exactly what people think that the problem that people think that they have with Olivia Munn, you know, like if you're humoring these boys by jumping in, you know, wearing a French maid outfit and all of this stuff, and you know, and. That's probably fair. She's playing a really, really dumb blonde every morning on the news, and he called her out on it.
Well, it's also a mode, too, like you and I talked. If you're going to have a satirical media show,
right,
you have to have female correspondents who are stunning. Mm-hmm. Turn on the real news.
Yeah.
All of those women could win a pageant contest.
They are all so easy to hate.
They're all so easy to hate. And you have to mirror what you're satirizing. You know, I mean, that is just what you have to do. Which is why there has been a white male host sitting at the desk of the Daily Show, because sitting at the desk of every news show on television, on every channel, there is not, I don't believe there is one African American hosting a show, is a white guy, for the most part.
There has to be one African American out there somewhere. No,
well, Tamron Hall is on MSNBC, and she's stunning. That Tamron Hall.
Oh right, yes.
A thing of beauty.
She is
a thing of beauty. She is.
You know who's not
lovely? She's morning dew.
Who? Fareed Zakaria. He's not that attractive.
Fareed Zakaria.
Oh, Zakaria. Yeah, I don't watch. I don't have a TV. This is a problem.
Oh, you see, I have it on constantly, which is a problem.
I
can speak to these things.
I think that I would slit my wrists in that kind of case.
Yeah.
I have a question. Do you?
Yes.
You haven't been smoking a cigarette during this conversation, have you?
No, I have not. I've refrained.
I was gonna.
I don't smoke.
You don't smoke?
My mom is watching this. No, I don't smoke. I don't smoke, Mo.
Okay.
Got it. Remember when I quit that time?
Oh yeah, back then.
Yeah.
God, yeah, another right, reason yeah. I hate
yeah,
you.
Yeah, you just forgot. You're
so
forgot.
Easy
you just
to
forgot.
Hate.
Yeah.
No, another thing that I
so
wanted
easy to hate.
Get into though, because I was reading the newspaper today, in lieu of watching the TV, was that, you know, it's hard to get a job at the Daily Show. It turns out it's really hard to get a job at Teach for America. Did you see this story?
Yes. Yes.
All these people being like, you know, taking, you know, jobs at Goldman Sachs and, you know, Fulbright scholarships because they couldn't get in to Teach for America.
Right. And I hate to tell people that, like, just the showbiz meme in general, what's happened is, you know, because of this horrible, horrible, horrible economy, the smaller shows that, like, you could do an intro job at in television
mm-hmm.
is now, like, all the top guys and women who used to write on shows who were fancy, who used to just always be in the fancy job pool,
right.
are now moving into the pool that, like, intro shows and smaller shows. And so we're in a job crisis, period. And so if there's really, if it really is news that, of all the places that it's really hard to get a job because you have to be so not only hilarious but also a brilliant news junkie,
autistic,
instead of 110 getting people off the unemployment rolls, right? We have
but
a serious
okay.
problem with what we're focusing on. I mean, there's just a serious problem that
now, yeah,
the conversation
exactly.
isn't about
yeah.
jobs.
We have, what is our real unemployment rate right now? I think it's back around like 18%, 17-something%.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And the census is over.
To mention, Mo, you know what I think is really scary is that I think Nevada has like the highest unemployment rate in the country, and there's legalized prostitution there. And so if you can't even get a job selling your body, yeah, you can't even get a job selling your body because there's not enough people who can pay for sex. Like, to me, that is really saying a lot about where we live as a country.
Yeah, no, but I think that it's going to come to that because last night I was at a party and I was talking to a kid who's like 20 or 19 years old, and he's up and coming. You know, he's a literature major. He's kind of a little genius. I was saying, I'm thinking about becoming a bartender because I think that is probably one place where there will still be jobs in this country. And he was saying, yeah, I was thinking about going into sex work. And I was like, oh.
I was thinking of going into the correctional system and becoming a prison guard.
Oh.
Because I think along with unemployment, the next thing to come is crime.
Yeah. Well, what's strange is that crime rates have actually fallen in this recession significantly, considerably. And I have no...
Because people can't afford to commit them?
I think there's a lot of situations. I think that people aren't reporting as many because there are so many fewer households that, like, a lot of crime right now is, that, like, a lot of criminals are probably preoccupied stripping foreclosures, That's what I think.
Right.
And those are not crimes that get, for one thing, they're not, like, violent. They don't get reported. Sometimes they're violent, but, So there's a lot of theories I have, actually. I, like, wrote a list of theories that I had for why this was. But I don't doubt that it's going to see an uptick because, I don't know. Because we're laying off cops, It's bad news out there. And the fact that, the discourse has gone so far to the right that, like, an extra stimulus is politically infeasible, or that, we're taking, we're talking about austerity and we're talking about, cutting programs, once again. And Tim Geithner, a Wall Street's relieved because Tim Geithner is promising that he's only going to cut, he's only going to raise capital gains taxes to 20% and not the 40% that, Congress would like. These are the real problems.
I saw that bonehead who I'm sure you can't stand, Steve Moore, yesterday on TV.
Oh, God.
I know. And he literally, after all of this, said the solution is the flat tax. And the fact that I'm speaking to you today and didn't stab myself in the eye is shocking.
Well, I mean, the one thing I could say for some sort of flat tax is that, the problem is that at some point we have so few corporations and wealthy people paying their taxes. There's so many ways out of it. And there are so many loopholes.
That they would actually be paying
that
something?
That there are certain flat tax proposals that I've seen that actually would bring the country in a more populist direction. Unfortunately, they would also, put a lot of accountants out of business. And, and a lot of IRS. I mean, they would actually kind of, and that would be a problem. This is dealing with, there are kind of neat ideas out there, I think. But there's a certain amount of status quo disruption that is infeasible, I understand. Which is one of the reasons I do think that, a lot of the solution to our problems is enforcing laws that are already in place against white-collar crime and fraud and tax evasion and, what have you. Going after the banks with the laws that were already on the books. But if we keep shrinking the government, we're not going to have any SEC attorneys or IRS investigators or, just FBI agents to go after this stuff. And that's their plan. I mean, that's what they want, the right. They don't want those crimes to be enforced.
And those are the people who are not complaining about how many women are on The Daily Show, because they're too busy trying to destroy the government.
Exactly. No, yes, exactly. Alan Greenspan was just out at some ideas conference or something. I forget what he was doing. I get all my news from Twitter now, so it's not really like, it's not very substantial. It's just all in like these 140 character bursts. But yeah,
right.
I saw a speech. This is multi-tweets. But, you know, somebody was tweeting an Alan Greenspan speech where he was blaming Fannie and Freddie for the subprime mortgage crisis and saying that, you know, look, we can't, raising taxes is a bad idea because, you know, history has shown us that, low tax rates are the only way that you get, you know, consistent growth and innovation. And I'm just like, well, where the hell does that come from? You idiot. You know, not that this man has ever, you know, been somebody who cared about the facts or, you know, the truth of anything. But you know, my God, and he's out there, you know, preaching fiscal austerity, and he created this. I mean, if there's one person who was reading that Dick Cheney book, Angler, and, you know, he and Dick Cheney were meeting every week at the White House throughout the Bush administration. Those two together, they did a real good job destroying this country. And
yeah.
And they're out there, keep on, you know, keeping on. And
yeah, they just walk the earth free.
And I hope that, all I would say is that Jezebel and The Daily Show should both, pay attention to those things instead, you know.
And I think The Daily Show is. I would have to say that I wish that Jezebel would.
I think The Daily Show is doing a pretty good job. And you know, Jezebel, I was reading something on about the military on there today. I don't know. It was on Twitter, so I can't even flesh that out at all. But you know, I think that they try, and definitely when I was there, we tried to kind of focus on issues that. That didn't have to do with, you know, this sort of sticky problem of, you know, what female celebrities are good and who are bad and who are part of the problem and who are part of the solution.
Mo, what you just said is where I wish Jezebel would spend more time instead of what appeared to me to be wanting to prove a theory. At a place that the theory is not true. Go out and fight bad guys, you know, through humor and fun and, you know, pick on the military and, you know, talk about celebrity. Sure, that's fine. But, like, to try to prove a hypothesis, especially on a show that has done nothing but consistently do something that the media dropped the ball doing, it's pretty lame to try to find an angle to shit on a show that's actually... When you think about one of the best shows on TV, it's that show. You know,
I would also add to the fact that, you know, and I've talked about this, and I'm not trying to shit on them, because the one thing about working at Jezebel is that you're just like, it's such a grind. You gotta like, you know, like piss out posts just, you know, one after another. You kind of sometimes have a forest trees problem. But you know, I was saying, well, if it is a boys club, which I'm willing to, you know, I'm totally willing to believe, but if it is, how is that affecting, you know, how is that affecting the programming? And to me,
but it's not a boys club. I'm just telling you.
I mean, there are so many boys clubs out there. I think that Wall Street being a boys club absolutely created a financial crisis.
Pants.
Because at so many intervals in the kind of meltdown of the financial system, there was a woman out there from Brooksley Board to Sheila Bair to Madeline Ann Tomczyk, the former risk manager at Lehman, like, you know, Zoe Cruz at Morgan Stanley, who was saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this. Hey, you know, maybe, you know, Sally Krawcheck, maybe we should give some money back to those clients we defrauded. No, Vikram Pandit wouldn't have that. And these are, you know, this is the kind of situation that you look back and you're like, when I actually looked at the financial crisis in totality, I was like, wow, more women need to be in power here because, you know, it's because the groupthink and the testosterone and whatever, you know, all these things, I'm going to get in trouble. But but they, you know, they've been systematically kind of, you know, discredited and you know, demoted, and it's been bad for the country. And I feel the same way about a lot of institutions. But, you know, I never saw any sign of that at the Daily Show.
No, and I have to tell you that, the Daily Show has to crank out a show every single day. And when people are in a writer's room and you've got to crank out the best show you can, anybody's gender is absolutely insignificant, because the focus is so much about getting the best idea and then honing that best idea and putting it out there. And I think if seven giraffes were funnier than women and men on that show, John would fire seven people and hire seven giraffes.
What about robots?
I mean, I really...
Are you worried about funny robots?
I mean, I really do believe...
Are there humor algorithms out there?
I'm not worried about funny robots. No. You know what? That's a good question.
What if there's going to... Are they going to outsource comedy to India? Are we not scared about that anymore?
I'm pretty sure I'm not afraid of that.
Okay.
I have no fear. I have no fear of that yet. But who knows?
Who knows?
At some point,
we've all got to raise our game.
Could happen. Yeah.
Tom Friedman.
Yeah, exactly.
We've all got to
raise your
game.
And you know what? Yeah. And if you're a woman and you want to, try to get a job on The Daily Show.
Lose weight.
You know,
lose weight is absolutely.
Absolutely. All you need to do is lose weight and jump out of a cake.
Stop.
But start writing and put shit on the internet so people know who you are. Because every time, you know, and I'll just close out with this, and that is, when people keep saying, there needs to be more and they're not out there, just keep in mind, you have no idea how somebody did in an audition. You have no idea that somebody who you might think is brilliantly funny doesn't know how to take their funny brilliance and translate it into the tone of the show.
Yeah.
And you know what? It takes a lot of hard work. And do you have it in you, the political chops and the comedy chops? And can you combine those two things together and then translate that into the voice of John in the show?
Right.
Can you? Ask yourself. That's all I'm saying.
And if you fail, fail, just try and again. Try and try again.
That's right.
Because the unemployment rate doesn't look like it's going anywhere, you know. You might as well sit around at home thinking up funny tweets.
Yeah, and if you can't even, get sex work job in Nevada because it's so bad.
I know, you might as well.
It's going to be that much harder to get a job on The Daily Show.
And also, if you are funny, that might help you get more clients as a whore, you know? I'm just saying.
Oh, that's true.
You know? Like,
people love a hilarious hooker.
Totally. Who was funny? Although she was always a little scary to look at, was Heidi Fleiss.
Robin
funny,
Bird.
Funny bitch.
Oh. Who?
Heidi Fleiss.
Ah, I know. She was funny, but she could fell a redwood with her teeth.
She's a little scary looking, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that, she was probably stressed. And the only time we did see her was when basically she was going into court, standing in court, or leaving court.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't really get a whole lot of, like, Fleiss by the pool or kind of just Heidi Fleiss relaxing. We never got to see those shots. So maybe she had a different glow about her when she wasn't under the scrutiny of that black book and Charlie Sheen's phone numbers.
I hung out with her once when I lived in LA and she was a really funny girl, but I think that she picked up a meth habit in prison. Either that or she had become an exercise anorexic. And she was
it's the same look. It's the same look.
Yeah. It was not. So I would just say that, beware of that. But if it's legal in Nevada, I don't know. Anyway, skills. We need more skills. The American people, there aren't a lot of jobs out there. It's a very competitive landscape. Some people like Olivia Munn, managed to make it.
And don't fault her for
it.
I'm
still unemployed.
Don't, you know what? That's the bottom line. Don't fault her because she got the job. Because you were faulting her before she even proved that she was
I know.
Good or bad at it.
You know,
and as it turns out, egg on your face for those of you who said she's not funny, because I thought she was really funny.
I thought she was pretty. I thought that the funniest thing was, I mean, I laughed a lot during that Russians thing.
Yeah.
I thought it was especially cool since she's Asian. So she got that, like, there was that little, like, and, you know, she was making fun of the United States and Russia and this Cold War, you know, rivalry, you know,
right.
And the fact that she's the senior Asian correspondent. I just thought it was just very, like, it was very clever. Like, ha ha ha.
And you're also a big Russian nerd, aren't you?
I'm a big Russian nerd.
Aren't you a nerd about Russia?
Well, I'm more
of a, love all things Russian.
I'm more of a nerd about China, but I'm a nerd, you know? I mean, the one thing about unemployment is that it's enabled me to spend a lot of time reading books, for no money, and becoming
bettering yourself so you're smarter and less employable because you have too many skills.
I know, yes, exactly. And that people, that, you know, I don't really fit into any institutional environment, but Teach for America, you know, oh, I don't have a college degree. Whatever. Anyway.
I don't either.
Oh, really? We have so much in common.
No, I dropped out.
We're both so easy to hate.
I know, we're both so easy to hate. Yes, I am a college dropout.
Where did you drop out
of? And then I dropped out of the University of Minnesota, a Big Ten school, later. A Big Ten school, that's right.
I kind of know what Big Ten means, but we didn't have any big, although once we...
Where did you drop out of? A smarty pants school?
University of Pennsylvania. So,
that's a
more of a careerist, you know, like it's where you go before you go to Goldman Sachs. And when I realized that, cause I just went there cause it was in Philly and I really liked this band, the Dead Milkmen. And,
oh, I love the Dead Milkmen too. And Alina.
And I, like, went to see them there or something. I forget, but I was really in love with Philadelphia. And I, you know, I didn't really know anything about where I was applying to school. And then I got there and I realized
and
that
why not there?
People there were going to make money. They all knew exactly how they were going to do it. And I realized I was smart and I realized that I wasn't going to do that. So I dropped out because if you're not going to make money, why pay money, you know? Like,
right.
You needed to get
right.
a return. That, why you did know, you drop out?
I dropped out because I actually started doing comedy my junior year of school. I was going to be a history professor. That was what I was going to do because I kind of love, basically, my
what
dad
kind of
was
history?
A World War II vet who was totally damaged and wouldn't talk about it. And so I was trying to get inside my dad. So I decided to get my degree.
Wow.
Or I went to get my degree in 20th century American history. And then after 3.5 years of that, I started comedy, and then the comedy started paying, and the rest is history.
Wow. Yeah, that's
or isn't,
sort of,
as the case may be.
I started at a newspaper, and that also kind of facilitated.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I don't need a college degree for this.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You know how
well,
that, you can do it.
That industry anyway. Died, so, you know, yeah.
See?
But,
I know. So we have to wrap it up here.
Yeah,
is there any final thoughts that you want to say?
I think that maybe should we say Hail Mary for Chris Hitchens? Or no?
I think that it would be lost on Christopher Hitchens.
this is like a
completely
a debate on Andrew Sullivan, whether it was like okay to pray for Chris Hitchens or whether he should, or I don't know. And
well, I think you should pray for any lost soul who doesn't believe in Jesus. And Chris Hitchens, I'm going to pray for your lost soul and that you are
accept
always
accept him
just,
as your savior.
Yeah, exactly. And have some more scotch.
Yes.
Your heart.
But
yeah, so I say to Jezebel, misguided, wrong, totally wrong on the article. And I think that now that we've seen Olivia Munn be super funny, maybe you should come back and do a little retraction on why she was hired. Because clearly she was hired because she was funny. That's my final word.
My final word would be more like, I mean, I think that actually, yeah, you might say she got kind of personal, it got kind of ugly, it got kind of stupid. You know, I think that it's kind of, I think that I'm just like probably done talking about it. But, you know,
yeah.
Find better target next time, I guess that's what I would say. And Olivia, yeah. You know, calm down. You're doing a good job. Your eyebrows grew back nice. You know, eat a sandwich.
Just keep being funny, Olivia, because that's gonna bury everybody. Just keep being funny, and you will be.
Yeah, totally. All right.
Awesome.
Okay.
Bye, Mo.
This has been fun.
See ya.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Bye.